Want to get the most out of the tread on your tires? Burt Brothers is offering a free alignment check and $20 off any oil change. Book your next service online today or stop by any Burt Brothers location near you and let them get your car ready for the adventure ahead. Burt Brothers, complete auto care done better.
You're free now. Free to stream beyond your wildest dreams. Free to be everything you imagine, and then some. That's how it feels to have Quantum Fiber. Your world unleashed. Learn more at quantumfiber.com. Limited availability. Service in select locations only.
Hello, you fans. Welcome in. This is the Crimson Corner Podcast. It's powered by KSLSports.com. I'm your host and Utes Insider, Trevor Allen. Thank you guys so much for tuning in to another edition. This time, we're talking about a win. Utah football picks up a 30-24 win over the Oregon State Beavers. It's their first win in, technically, as far as a calendar year, it's been just over a year. November 30th, 2019 was their last win, because as you guys know, they went on to lose to Oregon in the Pac-12 championship game last year and to Texas in the Alamo Bowl. But it's good to get in the win column. It wasn't pretty, I'll tell you that much right now. Utah got out to a 30-10 lead before Oregon State fired back, and Utah on offense really struggled at times. I mean, especially in that first half where they had to kick field goals when in their first three trips into the red zone. I know that that just made Kyle Whittingham furious. And then on top of that, when you're trying to run out the clock in the fourth quarter to win the game in your four-minute offense, you run the same play four times, and then you get stuffed. You definitely got to be more creative as far as your running attack, especially when you're trying to chew out the clock, because really Utah made it way too predictable for Oregon State, and they were figuring out what Utah was going to do, and you just can't do that. But either way, it's a win, and then it's also a short turnaround as they – take on the Colorado Buffaloes on Friday night in Boulder in technically the regular season finale, but Utah will have at least one more game, hopeful to have two, as they try to get bowl eligible, because as you know, as far as the landscape of college football, there's not a minimum number of wins you have to have in order to be eligible for a bowl game, but the Pac-12 conference put a mandate in there that you have to have a 500 record. So Utah would need to win on Saturday or on Friday against Colorado just to even be in that conversation, and then you're probably going to have to win next week, whoever you're going to play, in order to guarantee that. And really, that's not even much of a promise, because as you guys have seen, there's been a lot of bowl games canceled. I think upwards of 11 so far have been, and I think five of them have Pac-12 ties. So we'll definitely see what happens as we head down the home stretch. But I don't want to get too far ahead. I still want to take in the 2020 season for what we have left. And then also the Running Utes getting after it as they pick up a win in their season opener against Washington last week. We'll talk about that. And then they have two games this week, Idaho State at home, and then they're on the road at BYU on Saturday. All right, a couple of stories I want to look at. First, we're going to talk about the game against Oregon State. I'm going to give you guys five standouts from that game, and we're going to do this every single week here on the podcast and over at KSLSports.com. Give you guys five players, and it's not necessarily guys that, you know, just had great stats and things like that. They more just stood out for different reasons. It's kind of just more of a list that guys who caught my eye. So we'll start with Devin Lloyd. He had a great game. Seven tackles, six solo tackles, two tackles for loss, one sack, and a forced fumble. And that forced fumble came in the second half when he sacked Oregon State's quarterback, Chance Nolan. So it was an overall great game for Devin. And he's actually had double-digit tackles in the first two games entering this one. And he didn't lead the game in tackles for the Utes against Oregon State, but he was pretty dang close. But he was very productive in filling out the stat sheet. And then number two is JT Broughton, the cornerback. He's the one who led the Utes in tackles on Saturday. He had nine of them, including seven solo tackles and a pass breakup. He made some great plays on those two drives that Oregon State had in the second half when they had the chance to go and score a touchdown to win the game. But Broughton had some great pass breakups and just great coverage overall. And he has stepped up in a big way as the Beavers had to turn the ball over on downs twice. And then Brant Keithy, I'm glad to be saying his name because he wasn't really involved much in the season opener against the Trojans. And then last week against Washington, he was targeted early, and then that kind of tapered off. And then in this game against Oregon State, he was huge. He had 8 catches for 76 yards. Probably should have had 2 more catches, and both of those should have been for touchdowns. But Jake Bentley overthrew him or did not throw it right on his route. And so it is what it is. But Brant Keithy had a great game, and it's great to see him back in the win column and getting involved. And then Clark Phillips, the cornerback. The one thing that really has stood out to me about him is his open field tackling is really, really good, especially for a true freshman. But then you also look at what he's had to do against Washington. When Utah was in that nickel package, he would have to slide over to nickel because Malone Mataele was not available. And then against Oregon State, everything was back to normal. Malone was playing whenever they were in that nickel package. There were times where they went to that 4-3. But then Malone got kicked out of the game for targeting in the second quarter. So in that second half, Clark had to slide back over to nickel. Hopefully, especially since Malone does not have to sit out the first half of the game against Colorado, hopefully Clark can stay over onto the outside. But it just makes it more valuable that he's playing nickel as well as corner and that the coaching staff feels comfortable putting him there, especially as a true freshman, because Kyle Winningham has said, and I've said it many times on this podcast, that is the most difficult position to learn in Utah's defensive scheme. But Clark had 7 tackles and a tackle for loss. And then Mika Tafua is number 5 on this list. And again, this is in no order. It's just the way I put it on paper, basically. Mika had 5 tackles, 4 solo tackles, and 1 sack. And that sack came in the fourth quarter. It was a big play. 2 plays earlier, he actually came out of the game for an injury and then came into the game and on his first play back in the game, ended up getting a sack. So really just making plays and getting out there and getting into the backfield. So great job for him. And also, I will point out 2 other things. 1, Ty Jordan is a superstar in the making for Utah, and they have now found their lead running back. He was named Pac-12 Freshman of the Week after having 27 carries for 167 yards and 1 touchdown against Oregon State. The kid is absolutely electric and is going to be an absolute joy to watch for the next at least 3 years, potentially 4, potentially 5 actually, depending on what happens, especially with the eligibility freeze in college football. And then welcome back Britton Covey. 2 touchdowns, 1 catching, and then 1 punt return for a touchdown. Just seeing his speed again and how he's fully healthy, it's just absolutely incredible. And really great to see him back because he told us after the game that this was the first time that he really felt healthy since the first Washington game at Rice-Eccles Stadium in 2018. Now that really says something. It's been a long time coming and really happy for Britton Covey. All right, now it's time to talk about the game against Colorado. But first, I want you guys to hear from head coach Kyle Whittingham at his weekly press conference on Monday.
Yeah, it was good to get the win Saturday night. Had a lot of positive things happen in the game. Still have plenty to work on and things that we didn't do so well. But Ty Jordan was a bright spot for the offense. Very productive. 160 or 70 yards and had a big workload. I think he carried it 27 times. And so it was a breakout game of sorts for Ty. Defense did some good things, got some key stops at the end, which was really, that preserved the win. If we don't get those stops at the end, then who knows what happens. But like I said, it was good to get a win. We got a short turnaround this week. We got Colorado up in Boulder on Friday night. And so there's no time to savor the win on Saturday. We got to move on, which we have already done, and get ready for the Buffaloes. So questions?
Hey, Kyle, going into camp, you talked about how the offense would have to carry the defense, and it seems like, you guys are struggling on offense at times, and you guys are getting some really good play out of your defense, especially having such a young group. Are you kind of surprised at the progress your defense has been making and where your offense is at this point through three games?
Yeah, it hasn't played out exactly as I thought it would. Defense seems to be much more productive and further ahead than I think any of us thought. And we're not quite as productive on offense as we need to be right now. In fact, we've got a ways to go. And so didn't see that coming based on training camp. And that's why you never really can put a whole lot of stock in what's going on when you're playing against each other continually, because you don't get a great perspective. And so that's sometimes misleading, but really proud of the defense and particularly the way that the secondary has performed so far. I think we're first or second in the league in pass efficiency defense, which is pretty good when you consider that secondary is an entire rebuild. So, it has been a little bit unexpected, but in a good way for the D, and we still need to get on track offensively. And I think we've made progress offensively, but we still got a ways to go.
You guys are no stranger to, you know, short weeks playing on a Friday night, but I am curious, how does prep change, playing on a short week one, but also doing it on the road with all the testing and things that need to go on now?
Yeah, the testing is definitely an added factor in the preparation where that never existed before. But it's not really that dramatic of a change. When you're playing on a Friday, when you're playing on a Thursday, that's a much more compressed time frame. And so we are treating today like a hybrid Tuesday, I guess you could say, not quite as physical as a normal Tuesday, but we'll get out on the field. Where typically on Mondays, we don't do much on the field. It's more films and lifting. And so we just accelerate a day. That's the short version, is everything moves up one day and we should be fine. And the road trip is an easy trip to Boulder. It's only about an hour flight. So it's not a big issue there as well.
Just a quick follow-up on a different topic. Assuming that you've seen some film now, did you think that the targeting call was legit?
I wouldn't have called it if I was the official. I thought our guy got underneath the headgear of the opposing player, and I thought he was trying to get in there with the shoulder. But I'm not an official. But if I was an official, I wouldn't call it. I'm not saying I'm right. That's just my own opinion. Fortunately, it happened in the first half, so we'll get Malone back for this game. And that'll be important to us. He's our starting nickel.
The offense obviously fed the ball to Ty Jordan and Brant Keithy a lot on Saturday, and for good reason. They did a lot with it. But how do you go about distributing the ball to other people? You know, somebody like, let's say, a Solomon Enos or some other of the backers or other wide receivers. Like, how do you figure that into the play, or is it really just who's ever doing the best at that time?
I think the latter, and more of a week to week thing. Some weeks the matchups favor, you know, one person or a couple of players, and some weeks it's different guys. And so this last week, Ty Jordan was, you know, from the onset, he was ripping off big runs. And I think at one point he had over 10 yards a carry until late in the game when we got in those short yardage situations. And he had a few carries where that netted nothing. But he's always going to be a guy that, based on what we've seen in three games, he's going to be a guy that's going to get his share of touches. And as Brant Keithy as well, you know, we know his track record, he's a proven commodity. Covey is another guy that is going to get touches. And then we got to get the wide receivers a little more involved. We were down a couple wide receivers last week, at least they weren't full strength. And so when our receiving core is completely healthy, it's a weapon for us as well, but they've been a little banged up lately. But some weeks, some guys get more touches than others. And that is a matchup thing. And depending on where we feel we got the best advantage.
Yeah. You got the early signing period, I think, coming up in a couple of weeks. With this being a free year, what are your plans in terms of the number of guys you plan to sign?
Well, the signing day is coming up in 9 days. As a matter of fact, it's a week from Wednesday. And so we are right now scheduled to sign 17 players. And that would include one return missionary. And so 16 new guys and one guy that committed to us a couple of years back that is now back and ready to join the team. Was that the entire question?
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, here you go.
Kyle, I'm curious, in the fourth quarter, when you were going three and out there, those short yardage run situations, You mentioned play calling after the game, but now that you look to the film, you know, the run game's been so good and the numbers are so good, except in the short yardage. Is it the personnel? Is it the play calling running, you know, off tackle or something? Is it the numbers they're putting in the box? What all goes into something going wrong when it's been going so right?
Yeah, it's a combination of things. There's not just one thing, but it was disappointing that we ran the ball so well, except when we really had to. When we had to, we didn't seem to make much hay. Now, there was, you know, we missed a hole on one of the plays. The biggest disappointment, or the most disappointing series, for when we had the ball just about midfield. There was about 4 minutes left, and Ty Jordan rips off a 9-yard run on first down, so we get to second and one. And then three consecutive times we get stopped, second and one, third and one, fourth and one. But I think it was the third and one that we had a hole and we just missed the hole. Ty, the young running back, just misread it. And it was there. It was a gimme first down. But you're right. You're not right. But the point you bring up is exactly correct, that we've got to be a little more creative in those short yard situations, and have a few different alternatives than just running the inside zone play. And that's up to us as coaches to get that fixed. And that was, you know, there was some things coming out of that game, like I said earlier, that we definitely need to work on. And that was one of them, the 4-minute offense and short yardage, which is, you know, inclusive in that. Red zone offense, we had three trips in the red zone early in the game, field goal, field goal, field goal, which can't happen. You know, if you, 9-0 is a heck of a lot different than 21-0. And we had a chance to break the game open early and didn't do it. And we had some wide open guys, just missed them. But there's a lot of things coming out of that game that we need to work on, and we'll address it and continue to try to get better.
Clark Phillips had to play nickel, and I know that you haven't played it all the time, but, you know, him having to go in, playing nickel against Washington with Malone not playing, and then Malone getting ejected due to targeting in the first half against Oregon State. You also said in camp that nickel is the hardest position to play in your defensive scheme. How do you feel that Clark Phillips has played when he's had to play nickel?
Did a great job, and given the circumstances and being thrust in there and having not a lot of practice reps, we always try to keep him tuned up you know, during the week with a few reps at nickel just in case. And last couple of weeks we learned on Friday before the Washington game that we wouldn't have Malone, so he had 24-hour notice that he was going to be playing nickel. And then this last game, obviously, it was in-game when the change needed to be made. But Clark has been a very good player for us so far this year. We're only three games in. But him and Fabian Marks and Nate Ritchie, all three of those true freshman kids, have done a good job, and we're excited about their future.
With Ty having a track and field background, right, he was a 10-5 guy in high school. Is that something that maybe you look for sometimes in recruiting, that speed, kids who have a track background? Is that something that you can work with?
Without a doubt, that comes into play with all the skill positions you recruit. And if you're recruiting a skill position guy, and particularly wide receiver and corner, that doesn't have a track background, a lot of times that's a red flag, because guys that run fast love to run and they love to display it in the track season. And so if a guy has not run track, that's a skill guy, you better do your homework, because sometimes that means that his top end is not what it needs to be. And that's a big factor in recruiting. Like I said, the perimeter, and it comes into play at running back as well. And that's one of Ty's biggest assets, is his speed and his quickness. Quickness is every bit as important for a running back as top end. And so that always is examined and delved into when you're looking at skill players.
Quick follow-up, just, you know, with Colorado, you know, they're having a fine season, maybe better than some people expected. Just what are your early thoughts on Colorado as you start prepping?
Yeah, good football team, undefeated, 4-0, and they're doing some good things. The quarterback, fifth-year senior, is doing a nice job running the offense. The tailback is productive, solid O-line, solid receivers. Defense doing good things, primarily even front, about two-thirds even front, one-third odd front. Zone pressure, they're doing a good job with their zone blitzes. Mainly single high on early downs. Good defensive end, good linebacker. And so they got a lot of things going for them right now, and they're 4-0. So what can you say? I mean, they've been taking care of business.
Kyle, how does that happen? Because there's been so much change there. Three coaches in 3 years. There really weren't the expectations. What pieces of the puzzle has that coaching staff kind of been able to fit together to get to this point so quickly in what's obviously such a difficult year for coaching staffs?
Yeah, well, this year's weird all the way around. I mean, there's things happening that every week that are bizarre, in my estimation. You know, it's just, it's a crazy year. And so I would say in their situation, the cupboard was not left bare. They had a lot of good players when the last coach moved on, and the last coach moved on his own accord. You know, he wasn't let go or anything because of lack of success. And so they're just building upon what was started last year. And they've done a nice job, and their players they're playing hard, and it's just it's all lined up for them so far. They're doing a good job.
And there you go. That was head coach Kyle Whittingham. We're going to go ahead and take a break. When we get back, I'm going to give you guys three storylines that could determine the winner of Utah and Colorado on Friday night. You're listening to the Crimson Corner Podcast. Welcome back in. This is the Crimson Corner Podcast. It's powered by KSLSports.com. I'm your host, Trevor Allen. As Utah gets ready to take on a 4-0 Colorado team who is trying to fight for a Pac-12 South Division title, which I didn't think I'd ever say that coming into this year. I thought they were going to be one of the two worst teams in the entire South Division, and Carl Durrell has done a great job with that team. Now, they don't have the South Division in the bag. In order for them to get it, USC would have to lose this week to the UCLA Bruins, and Colorado would have to beat Utah. Because right now the Trojans are 4-0, but all four of their games have been conference games. Now, Colorado, when their game against the Trojans was canceled, they went and got San Diego State to play a non-conference game, which the game counts towards their record, but not towards the South Division title. Just chalk it up as another L in 2020 if you're Colorado. And right now, Utah enters the game as an underdog against the Buffs. But, you know, I've watched every game, every Pac-12 game this year. I've made it a effort to DVR every Pac-12 football game and then going back and watching it during the week. And I'll tell you what, this Colorado team is good, but I think Utah is talented enough to beat them, especially now that they have three games under their belt. But here's some guys to watch out for, and these are part of the three storylines. One, stopping the run. Colorado's running back, Jarek Broussard, has 733 yards through four games and three touchdowns on 115 carries. Last week against the Arizona Wildcats, he had 301 yards. Didn't have a touchdown, but did have 301 yards on, I think, 25 carries, which is absolutely insane. And then Sam Noyer, the quarterback, he is the second leading rusher among quarterbacks in the Pac-12, third, behind Tyler Shuck and Dorian Thompson-Robinson as far as yards. But he does have more rushing touchdowns than any quarterback in the Pac-12 with five. But Noyer has 179 yards and five touchdowns on 38 carries. Noyer is kind of a crazy story. He's now a fifth-year senior, played quarterback to start out his college career. Then last year moved over to safety, and then he entered the portal, and then Carl Durrell, when he got the job at Colorado, convinced Noyer to stay and move back over to quarterback and compete for the job, and then he won the job. So in order for Utah to win this game, Jarek Broussard can't get 300 yards. Sam Noyer can't break off big runs. That you cannot do. But Utah's defense has proven to be able to stop the run. They have allowed the second least amount of yards per game in the entire Pac-12. They are just 4 yards average behind Washington. And then in their rushing defense, Utah leads the Pac-12 with 104 yards allowed. Washington State is second at 132. But again, Washington State's only played two games. But then also passing, you don't want to get Noyer comfortable at all. Utah's allowed the third most passing yards per game, which it's at 246, which isn't bad in today's college football. So Utah stopping the run is going to be the biggest key to this game. I know that that was also a big-time priority for them against Oregon State, but Jamar Jefferson didn't play, so it wasn't as big of a deal. It'll be interesting to see if Utah is going to try and force Sam Noyer to throw, because you'd rather have that than to have him run, because watching some of his games, he's been able to break free. And then number two, battle in the trenches. I know that this is an every week thing, but Utah's offensive line is getting better. They were able to get some push against Oregon State, just not as much, especially in that 4-minute offense, and when Utah was getting into the red zone early in the game. So you've got to be able to stop Nate Landman, the linebacker, and some of their guys up front, and to be able to open up gaps for Ty Jordan, Devin Brumfield, Jordan Wilmore to be able to attack. And then also on the other side, Colorado's O-line is decent. I mean, if Jerick Broussard's going off for 300 yards in a game, he must be doing something right. And then the final thing, continue to get Britton Covey and Brant Keithy involved. It was great to see them get involved early in the game, but then when Utah was trying to chew out the clock, they weren't involved, and I think that there's ways to get them involved by using them within the running game. So continue to get them involved, continue to get them touches. All right, now time to switch over to some running Ute hoops really quick. And I'm more looking forward to the BYU game, because playing the Idaho State Bengals, this is going to be more of a tune-up. I mean, for Utah to go into the season for a conference game first, and then now they're going into non-conference, it's a little bit crazy, but again, it's 2020. Nothing's going to really surprise me anymore. But Utah played really well against Washington. Timmy Allen was really good. Fonz Plummer was outstanding. Although a little trigger-happy as far as trying to find his shots, and Larry Case said that as much after the game on Saturday. Or on Thursday. A guy I really like is Pelle Larsson, the freshman from Sweden. He had almost a double-double. He had 8 points and 7 assists. He was great. But as you look at BYU on Saturday, right now the Cougars are sitting at 5-1 right now. They have wins over Westminster, which is to be expected, by almost 50. And then they beat New Orleans by 25 at home. And then they beat UVU by 22 at home. And then they went to the Mohegan Sun Arena in Connecticut for the Roman Legends Classic. And they went 1-1 in that tournament. They got hammered by USC 79-53. That was an absolute beatdown. But the thing is, it kind of goes both ways. I think it was a dud game for BYU, but USC's legit. They have athletic, tall guys that are going to be problems in this conference. So Utah is going to be seeing them, and I'll tell you what, they're really good. And then they picked up a win over St. John's by 6 points the day after to end their run at the Mohegan Sun. And then their last game was on Saturday, and they picked up a 3-point win over Utah State up in Logan. But BYU will have one game, just like Utah will, before they clash in Provo on Saturday. They're going to be playing Boise State. So that's a tougher challenge for BYU than what Utah has coming up on Tuesday. And Boise's good. I think they were picked to win the Mountain West, or one of the top teams in the Mountain West this year. So it'll be a challenge for BYU for sure on Wednesday. And then obviously with Utah coming in, I think that Utah has some really good pieces to be able to attack. You've got to look at being able to stop the guard play. But they also have a couple of bigs. Colby Lee, he does all the grunt work out on the floor. And then you have Matt Harms, who's the big guy out of Purdue. They like to play him at the four sometimes. If that's the case, that could create a challenge for Utah, because you then got to force one of your smaller guys to guard him, whether it's Timmy Allen, Mickey Yantunin. I'm curious to see what happens with that. Although, just having watched both BYU and Utah basketball, I mean, we only have one game of sample size for Utah. I feel like Utah is really, really talented. This is a really good running Utes team. If for some reason they don't make it to the tournament this year, they'll definitely make it next year, because everybody's back. except for Fonz Plummer. He is the only senior on this team. Unless Timmy Allen decides to test the NBA waters again and actually goes into the draft, everybody else is back. It'll be interesting. Tip-off is at 4 o'clock on Saturday at the Marriott Center, and it's on BYU TV. All right, that will do it for this edition of the Crimson Corner Podcast. Head over to kslsports.com to check out the latest on the Utes, and also download the KSL Sports app. It's right at your fingertips to get all of the latest content regarding the Utes. Till next time, thank you guys so much for listening. This is the Crimson Corner Podcast.
Finally time to say goodbye to the snow and hello to spring, and right now is the best time to spring into adventure in an RV from a Motorsportsland RV Center. Through this week, come check out Motorsportsland's season kickoff event and find the RV you've been dreaming of. Save thousands and even tens of thousands off MSRP and find your next adventure at a Motorsportsland RV Center today.
Let Motorsportsland help you get away.
Motorsportsland.com.
Hey, Casey Scott here, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Project Recovery, sponsored by Reprieve Recovery. It's a podcast about addiction, but more importantly, it's about recovery. My co-host, Dr. Matt Woolley, and I hear stories about overcoming addiction and going from rock bottom to living a healthier and sober lifestyle.
We also share strategies with people at all stages of recovery, and we hope it'll help you find what works best for you, and we can support one another. That's Project Recovery, a KSL podcast. Subscribe for free anywhere you listen to podcasts.